Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in. This is episode 9 of the Card Chronicle podcast. Mike Rutherford here with Danny Sinard once again. It's been bizarre. I don't even know if that's the right word. Couple of days in not just the sports world, but the entire world. Everybody reacting to the news of Kobe Bryant's just shocking death a couple of days ago. And I mean, Kobe, they're showing the last game on TV right now behind me. It's been, and this is coming from somebody who admittedly, not a Kobe guy. Like, I've actively rooted against Kobe pretty much his entire career. Didn't mind him towards the later stages of his career, but even for me, just it's been a shocking deal. And I think, as somebody who is a recent father with a daughter, that has added a different element. But it's just been kind of hard to not just pay attention to the tributes and the videos and all that stuff, and to focus on anything else going on in the world. That's just kind of been me. Dan Sinard, your, I guess, just general thoughts on the last 48 hours or so here.
Yeah, I mean, I think, every take has been taken so far, just because there's been just an outpouring of support and emotion ever since this happened. But I mean, I'm still in shock. Like you said, his last game is going on right now, and it seems like it's almost in the present tense, like he's actually still here. And just seeing kind of the lasting effect that he's had on not just the sports world, but people around the nation, it's actually been unbelievable to watch. And I was kind of thinking about it today. We haven't really had like a true like sports figure since I'm 34 years old, of his stature pass away, so kind of close to where his prime was. Mm-hmm. And there's just something maybe, and I'm not comparing deaths by any means, but maybe something a little bit more relatable with an athlete passing, compared to maybe like a musician or a politician. Because with an athlete, we've seen Kobe grow up from high school to the NBA, and we've seen him at his, at his highs, and we've seen his lows. We've seen him go through injuries. We've seen him, make mistakes off the court and on the court. And maybe just a more relatable figure than someone, who has a concert and then gives, calculated interviews, or a politician that we don't see, on a daily basis. So, it's been surreal. Obviously thoughts and prayers are with his family and everyone, everyone else that was affected, by what went down.
Yeah, whenever there's somebody that's, larger than life who has that description applied to them and have it apply aptly, it's always going to be shocking when they pass away before, if it's before age 60, especially. So like when Prince died, that was a shock. Payne Stewart, I remember being pretty young. That one came out of nowhere. I mean, he was still playing at the time, and it was such a bizarre story the way it all unfolded on live TV. Michael Jackson, a decade ago, that was shocking. This is the first one, though, where like 48 hours later, it still just feels like it can't be real to me. He was such a huge figure and just had this presence about him that made it seem like he was going to be around for at least the next 40 to 45 years. And it just seems unfathomable that he could be gone in the snap of a finger. Especially, you were in town this weekend. You and I were out with friends, and we're watching LeBron on TV passing Kobe, and we're seeing him talk, and we're seeing him, on television, like highlights of them bro hugging from a couple of weeks earlier, and all of a sudden, snap of a finger, less than 12 hours later, he's just gone. It just still feels so unfair. Just that it's all, and I know this is bigger picture stuff, not just related to Kobe, but that it can be just a light switch where, you're here, you're alive, you're larger than life, you're this gigantic figure, and then bam, it's just, it's all gone. So it's been a weird thing to process, I think, for everybody. And I think you're right, too. I think especially for people our age who, I mean, I can't really remember a time where Kobe Bryant wasn't something, where he wasn't, you know, the high school phenom that you'd heard about growing up, or the draft pick, or the rookie who was shooting a bunch, or, you know, the next Jordan and all this stuff. He's always been a fixture in the sports world. And now to just have him be gone when it seemed like he was right there on the precipice of something new, getting involved in you know, his daughter's lives and women's basketball and doing a whole bunch of different stuff. It just seems, again, it's still just real, real hard to process. But like you said, I think every take now has been dished out, so we won't spend any more time on that. But you're right, it's been a weird 48 hours to adjust to. The thing that happened before then that we're going to spend more time focusing on here on this podcast, Louisville, I think gives the performance on Saturday that Cardinal fans have been waiting to see for weeks at least. I mean, it's been a long time since we've had a start-to-finish dominant performance against a, you know, non-low major, mid-major opponent. This is a conference team, and I know Clemson's not great, but it's a Clemson team that still entered Saturday's game having won four of their last five. They were playing, I think, the best basketball in that middle portion of the conference of anybody in the ACC besides Syracuse, who now all of a sudden looks like the fourth best team in the league. So to have them come into your place riding a decent amount of momentum, having that win over Duke still fresh in their mind, the first win against North Carolina in Chapel Hill in program history still fresh in their mind, and to just beat them down from start to finish, I don't think that's nothing. I think that is something to be celebrated. I think it is yet another step in the right direction for this team. We always do this after games. We give, you know, this is what podcasts are for, gigantic overreactions. We give our big overreaction to every game. Louisville 80, Clemson 62. Dan, what's your big overreaction from this performance?
My overreaction is this is the team we are capable of being. This was the team that I actually thought was going to show up against Georgia Tech. Now, granted, we saw Georgia Tech come back and have a nice win this weekend, and so they might be a little better than we thought. But it was so nice just to have a game to where, you know, we got a lead early, and we didn't let Clemson really back in at all, and it was just nice to, you know, kind of breathe easy throughout the whole game. And we got, you know, we got to rest Malik. He only played 14 minutes. You know, Jordan, kind of like we talked about last podcast, he really didn't have to do a whole lot. He had 10 points, and they were like a nice, easy 10 points. No really forced shots. David is improving with every single game. And it's been nice to have kind of a development at the point guard situation with David and Fresh and see Darius kind of move over to the two guard and have a lot of success there. You know, I think, and you can chime in on this if you want. Darius seems like a guy, like there's some guys, like he is a player that I think is going to be better suited to play at home. Like he just seems like he gets like a little extra buzz when he's playing in the Yum Center. That's just my opinion. I mean, he might have good road games. I hope he does, you know, throughout the rest of the season, but he seems like a guy that at home I feel a lot more comfortable with than on the road. But I mean, overall, nothing to complain about this game. Just a dominant performance from start to finish. I still think Clemson's an actually pretty decent team, and on both sides of the ball, I thought we were tremendous.
Yeah, I like the fact that, you know, we come out, we set the world on fire the first 20 minutes. You know, we're up, I think, 18 at halftime or 16 at halftime, whatever it was. And every single Louisville fan is in the exact same boat where we're like, okay, cool, let's do this for 40 minutes, please God. Like, if we let this thing get down to 4 points or less heading into the last segment, like, the first half is meaningless. And the fact that they didn't, you're right, it never felt like Clemson had a run in them. You never felt like, here we go again. There were a couple of sloppy moments, and I know Chris Mack said he wasn't overly thrilled with the way they played in the second half, but I think the biggest thing for me, especially big after what we saw against Georgia Tech earlier in the week, the effort level never dwindled. And he said that was the big thing. He said we played with tremendous energy throughout the entire game. We had a couple of times where we had lulls on offense, but we never stopped playing really hard. And I think that was across the board, too. It wasn't like the Georgia Tech game where you saw some guys get their heads down. You mentioned Jordan Wara. He looked like a guy who just had gotten a talking to. Like he didn't force anything. He didn't even take a shot, I think, for the first 7 minutes of the game, which is very, very unlike him. But he played hard on defense. He hit the glass like we've seen him do before. He let the game come to him, and he seemed like he was genuinely enthused by the way his teammates were playing, which is something that hasn't always been the case with him. So I thought that was awesome. My big overreaction from this game, and it's really not from this game specifically, but I think if you could take first segment Darius Perry and final segment Fresh Kimball and combine them, I think it's the best point guard in the country. And I've had this weird thing where I feel like Darius, even when he has terrible scoring games, even when he scores 3 points, 5 points, 6 points, I feel like he always hits one of our first jumpers.
You're exactly right. I noticed that too. I'm glad you picked up on that.
Yeah. So I went back and I actually looked at it. He has made Louisville's first jump shot in three of the last four games, and he's made at least one jump shot in the first segment of a game in seven of Louisville's last 11 games. So for as poorly as he's played sometimes on offense in the last, I guess, month and a half or 2 months, he's been really good in those first segments for whatever reason. And then we've talked a bunch about Fresh Kimball's play down the stretch. He seems to, you know, when the lights are the brightest and the pressure is the highest, he seems to, you know, find another gear and just do things that he doesn't do in the middle of game. So if you could somehow combine those two guys, I think they would be one of the best guards in the country. But yeah, I mean, props to Darius. It wasn't just the first segment in this game. He scores 19 points. It's a career high. He was lights out from outside the arc. And I like that Mac after the game talked about, look, he played a great offensive game, but it wasn't just the offense. He was terrific on defense. He didn't force things, didn't make silly decisions with the ball in his hands, got his teammates involved too. And obviously he shot the ball really well. And I think Darius, he kind of has this reputation for being a streaky shooter. He's 41.7% from three this year. Like, that's pretty damn good. That's right there. Just a shade behind, a one percentage point behind Ryan McMahon, and very only 2 percentage points behind Jordan Wara. If you're talking about great 3-point shooters on this team, which is one of Louisville's biggest skill sets, he's a big part of that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it just seems like the last three games, Mac is, I'm calling him Mac. All right. Chris, my boy, Chris, it seems like he's finally getting a handle on kind of the rotations. You know, I think at the beginning of the year, he had to tinker a lot. But you know, we're seeing consistent playing time from Sam. You know, he's not afraid to play, you know, our kind of four interchangeable guards together. And it just seems like he has a better feel for who he wants and needs on the floor right now. And that's really comfortable to see, you know, kind of as a fan. You know, one thing I liked is, I just love, I know we went on that 20-0 run. And that's just so good to see. Cause I mean, that could, you know, those kind of things can easily be like a 7-8-0 run and, you know, just kind of let up. But I mean, 20-0, you're really kind of, you know, keeping your foot on the gas pedal there. And it was just good to see them say like, hey, we're going to put this game away early. That's what we've been waiting for from this team all year. And I just really like where we're at right now. I think, you know, everyone's confidence is high, and we're definitely trending in the right direction. And, you know, with the schedule we have coming up, anyone can win an ACC game. I mean, you can win or lose any game, but I just think we've really put ourselves in a nice position here to make a run until kind of some of our later tougher games in the conference schedule season.
First of all, I'm not going to let you get away with that bullshit cliche. Like, everybody cannot win a game this year in the ACC. This is the one year where you can't not get away with saying that. Duke, Louisville, and Florida State are the three best teams, and it's not close. We're probably going to slip up. But let's not act like playing, you know, Team 10 in this conference is the same as playing Team 10 in this conference a couple of years ago. It's a bad league. It is. So shame on you for saying that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Listen, do I think we're going to like beat Boston College? Of course I do. Would I be like absolutely like fallen on the floor shocked if we lost to him? Probably not. I mean, these are 18-year-old kids. You can never predict what kind of mindset they're going to have when they come out. But I mean, like I said, right now, I would definitely bet on the Cards if I was, you know, trying to put money on, you know, them going against lesser opponents. But yeah, I mean, I know it's cliche, but I mean, it can happen. And if it does, I'm definitely going to call you out on the podcast now.
Well, we're going to lose games, but I don't think you can say like, well, every game's a toss up this year in the ACC, because it's not like we should win a lot of these games. We're definitely going to fall, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But I want to go back to what you were talking about a little bit earlier. I love the fact that right now it seems like everybody's kind of contributing a decent amount, because, yeah. And not just for obvious reasons, because obviously you want every player in your team doing something positive, but I like that we don't have the concern of there being an attitude out there that kind of that spreads, because if anybody who's ever played on a team or been on a team at work or, you know, been a part of a group, all it takes is that one person who gets upset about stuff and develops a shitty attitude and starts talking shit to, you know, their friends in the group, and it spreads and it becomes a plague and it can really affect an entire team. So I love that we've got, you know, the two freshmen are going. Samuel Williamson has, I think, really turned the corner. It's been more quiet than David Johnson's star turn, but it's definitely been happening. And Saturday was another example. Darius Perry getting back in the flow is big. I think Jordan definitely had a better attitude on Saturday. I think that any concern about him bringing people down is out the window. Malik Williams and Stephen Enoch seem to be, I think, good with their situation, splitting time at the center position. And then the other captains, like Ryan McMahon, he's playing fewer minutes, but he seems to be even more engaged in the sidelines. Dwayne Sutton continues to lead by example. Fresh Kimball seems to, you know, really be embracing his role on the team. And then even getting like the freshmen into that game at the end on Saturday, I think that helps. I mean, everybody, you feel a little bit better if you play 45 seconds in any game. And seeing Aiden Gahan score some points by getting to the free throw line, I think everybody seems to have a real positive vibe right now. And that's huge at this point in the season when you're looking for a stretch run and you're looking to avoid what you did last year, which was have a really fantastic January and then a really terrible February. And I don't think that's going to happen this year. And I'll say, you talked about Chris Mack after the game. Let's go ahead and say it. I feel like our guy, Chris, I think he for the first time really feels like he's got something here. I think he knew the whole season that this was possible, but when he was expressing like his dissatisfaction with the senior leadership and with, you know, guys not being focused and not paying attention to game plans, like that wasn't bullshit. He seemed genuinely perplexed and frustrated by this team way too often during December and the first part of January. And I think now finally, the way that he looked after that Clemson game, the way that he talked in that post-game press conference, I think he's not going to say it, but I think he really, really is starting to see that this could end, this could end in a very special way 2 months from now.
Yeah, and we need to just call a spade a spade. The main reason for this feeling is the emergence of David Johnson. You know, sure. What he has done since, you know, kind of the Duke game is just, and we've talked about it, and, you know, one of our friends said we basically are picking up an all ACC guard, and what he does for everybody else on the floor, he sees passing lanes that other people can't see. He runs the break, you know, about as good a guard as we've had in a while, I feel like, you know, since like the Russ Payton days almost. You know, he finishes through contact. He's just an absolute game changer and has just taken our team to the next level. And he was a huge part of that 20-0 run, obviously. You know, throwing alley-oops, following up dunks, making passes off the high pick and roll, finding people in the corner. I mean, he's literally doing it all right. I'm going up for rebounds. And, you know, I just think going forward, you know, it's a broken record, but I just think he is going to be the key guy for us as far as, you know, how far this team is going to go. I think Dave just, you know, he's a guy capable of putting our team on our back if we need it to at this point.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, you feel differently about Louisville's long-term prospects now than you did 2 weeks ago. And it's not entirely David Johnson, but God, it is a significant, significant chunk of why you feel that good. The other thing that I like, though, is, you know, with Darius Perry, I think, playing well now and obviously having that big game against Clemson, and Fresh Kimball establishing himself as this just solid guard that's not going to hurt you and who's going to make plays down the stretch, I think that's important, because at some point between now and March, and maybe it happens in the ACC tournament, maybe it happens in the NCAA tournament, or maybe it happens in some big game between now and then, like, David Johnson's going to play like a freshman. We've seen him make some mistakes, even when he's played really well. I mean, down the stretch against Duke, he made two really incomprehensible decisions that almost, you know, that played a part in them coming back and having a chance to win. That stuff's going to happen with him. For all the good that he does, and the good certainly dramatically outweighs the bad, there's going to be one game where he just can't put it together for whatever reason, because every freshman has a game like that, especially ones who missed the first month of the season. And having Darius Perry and Fresh Kimball playing the way they are right now and looking like they can be something of a stabilizing force, that's no small thing either. So again, I think having everybody kind of feeling like they're in a positive place right now as we make the turn for February is enormous. The other thing that I really liked about the game against Clemson was the job that we did against Amir Sims, because he came in, I mean, his stat line over the past 3 weeks has been just otherworldly. He was the best player on the floor against Duke. He was the best player on the floor against North Carolina. He's their leading scorer. He's their leading rebounder. And he's their I think, second best assist man and probably their best overall passer. And Mac, he gave some shine to Jalen Withers after the game, saying that they'd used Withers to play Amir Sims in practice. He'd done a really good job getting everybody prepared. And he said, if you go back and watch the UNC film, Amir Sims made passes on back cuts, I think 7 or 8 times successfully. And we didn't allow that to happen a single time in the game on Saturday. And to me, it shows that we're finally getting these guys to fully just dive headfirst in this game plan and not just gloss over it, but really embrace it. And it reminded me of after the Kentucky game, when the biggest point in overtime, Nick Richards has that cross screen basket. And Max says, we had prepared for that all week long and we defended it successfully in that same game, and guys just fell asleep. So to go from there to where we were on Saturday in a month where guys just aren't allowing anybody to go fantastic to 1 of 7 from the field, I think that shows a dramatic increase in just the mental side of the game and being more mature and being more focused and all these things that we knew this team had to develop if they were going, like, they can have all the talent in the world and all the experience in the world, but if they didn't lock in and really just up their intensity level and up their focus level, they were never going to accomplish something special. But it seems like a little thing, but to me, I think it's just another sign of this team's evolution at this point in the season.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Is I think the team is finally buying in. Not that they, you know, obviously at the beginning of the year they wanted to do well, but they're really buying into the team concept. That, you know, there's not nearly as much hero ball on the offensive or defensive side of the ball lately. I know we had the bad first half defensively against Georgia Tech, but I mean, I thought we've played solid defense, I feel like, for most of the year, and like you said, on offense, it's nice that everyone's starting to accept the role. And I'm glad you pointed out Ryan, because you know I'm a Ryan guy. I love Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
I love him since he's come in the program. And he's really, you know, since it, not only from last year, but even the beginning of the year, had to reduce his role a decent amount. And really, you know, if he gets open shots, he's going to take them. But he hasn't had to do as much for us. And when you catch him on the bench or after a big shot, he is so, you know, more, he's so engaged in the game that it's one of those guys that you're like, all right, I feel good. Like, this guy's our captain. He's getting everyone kind of involved and engaged in this game just with, like, how into the game he is, even if he's only taken, like, you know, 4 shots. And he's playing well. He's stepped up defensively this year. I feel like I need to give him credit. I know his height puts him at a disadvantage. Sometimes when we play teams with taller guards, you know, even if he does play good defense, they can shoot over him. But he's really stepped it up from the, you know, from when he got here to where he is now on the defensive end. And I just think everyone is starting to buy into their role and do their job. And, you know, that's what's going to take it. You know, if we do want to make a run, is, you know, for everyone to get on the exact same page and, you know, for there to be, you know, not any one-on-one or hero ball, just everything's got to be a team concept going forward.
Yeah, I love watching guys like Ryan this time of the year, guys who know that they're, you know, who love basketball, who obviously are skilled enough to get to this level, but who know that they're probably not going to make a living doing this at the highest level. Like a guy like Ryan can go and play overseas and make a decent living if he wants to follow that route, but he's not going to be an NBA guy. And when you see those guys get to this point in their senior seasons and have that realization that this is, you know, it's 2 months for the rest of my life, to use the Tim Tebow or Varsity Blues cliche, like they just kind of take it to another level. They have this sense about them, like, I will die for this shit. Like, I need this deep run. This is my last chance to make this memory. And you just kind of see that page turn. And we've seen it happen, I think, a lot of times with guys who are cut from that same cloth. And so to see it with Ryan, I think to see it with Dwayne too, like, he's kind of that same way too, maybe a little bit with Stephen Enoch. I know that he has pro aspirations as well. But I think for most of these guys, really for everybody besides Jordan Wara, who's playing their last college season, I think they have a sense that this may be like this is kind of as good as it gets. Like, they're never going to be as paid attention to as they are right now, especially in this community, which cares about college basketball so much and cares about this Louisville team so much. They're never going to, you know, I think maybe have as much hype, be as prominent on national TV, and have a chance to do something as special as they have over these next 2 months. And I think that you're seeing that kind of click with a lot of these guys, and it's always a cool thing to see. You brought up, I mean, you did mention, and I gave you shit for it, but like, Louisville probably is going to lose a game at some point between now and when they play Florida State. And it's going to be a game, people are going to flip out. We always flip out about it. But is there anybody on the schedule between now and then that you look at for whatever reason and say, I just don't feel good about that game? Like, if I told you that we 100% are going to lose at least one game between now and February 24th when we go to Tallahassee, who would you say that game is?
Oh, man. There's three games that I look at and I'm like, okay. To be honest, and you might not agree with this, I think at NC State this weekend, only because I know NC State lost tonight to North Carolina, I'm aware. But there seem like a team that's going to be desperate for a win. It's going to be at NC State. Sometimes when teams get desperate, weird things happen. So I have that one circled. I'm not saying that's my choice. And then the other two are Virginia and Syracuse. And I know Virginia, the issues we've had with them in the past, and I know they're different this year. I watched the Wake Forest game. You know, they were very lucky to win that game. I still don't know how they won. It's like, my guy Danny Manning, he's not long for being in Winston-Salem.
Can I stop you right there? Can I just make it a point? Because people don't know you who are listening to this podcast. You have a long-running history of vouching for head coaches that are arguably like bottom five coaches in the sport. Like, you are.
I love Danny Manning.
You are a big Steve Alford guy. You are a big Danny Manning guy. The coaches that you choose to back and choose to support, I'll never understand why, but they are the worst fucking coaches in the entire sport. So the fact that you've been hanging on to Danny Manning for the last 5 years.
I said Chris Beard, and I feel like that just got swept under the radar. I love
I don't
Chris
remember
Beard,
that at really. All. I do not well, remember. I have yeah, no of recollection course. Of that.
Okay, well, there we go. I was like, oh, Mike White and at Florida, and he's been terrible this year. I'm like, God, somebody help me out here.
Yeah,
you're
just completely drowning on this.
But no, my final answer is Syracuse, only just because when we played them last year, and sometimes it takes coaches a little bit to get acclimated to that 2-3 zone, and you know, we went there last year and just, it was our worst, I would say one of our worst games of the year, if not our worst. We just did not look prepared for the 2-3 zone at all, and you hope that we've made adjustments, like, you know, in the offseason, in the year we've had to prepare for them. But not only that, they're playing a lot better. They seem to have it going a little bit. So I'd say if there was a game we were going to lose, that would be my choice.
I'm actually going with the first one that you mentioned, and it does seem crazy, but NC State on Saturday really concerns me. For whatever reason, we just don't play well against them, period. And we especially don't play well against them there. We lost the last time we played there. It was back in 2018, that late. It was when we, it was the game after, I think, the Virginia home game, where it was like, we need to win this game to save our season and have a shot to make the NCAA tournament. And we were just totally deflated. We barely won there the time before then. And then we lost there. I guess, in the time before that when we played on the road in Raleigh. So it's Markell Johnson. Like, I think I'm the biggest Markell Johnson fan in the entire world. I love his game. I think he's fantastic. Sometimes he does check out a little bit. I think he gets frustrated with his teammates. But against a team like Louisville, he's going to take it personally. And they do have this sort of weird, I think, mental thing with North Carolina where they just cannot, like, with Duke and UNC, it's a little bit of a big brother, little brother thing. I know that that's, I think it's overblown a lot of times, but in this situation, I think it's pretty, there's definitely some real vibes there. So they're going to be trying to bounce back from that. And like you said, all of a sudden they go from the team that looks like they're clearly the fourth best in the conference and that they're going to, you know, have a relatively easy time getting an at-large bid at the tournament. And now they're probably on the wrong side of the bubble going into this weekend. They're going to be desperate for a win. And I also think Funderburk's a good player inside, as kind of just crazy as he is in general. I think he's a decent player who could give us some fits. So I just have a weird feeling about that game. Plus, we got like the late night tip Wednesday night at Boston College, 9 o'clock. I don't know what's going on there.
That, as soon as I saw 9 o'clock, I was like, why does that make me nervous? I'm not a huge fan of that.
I don't know. I mean, you're right about, like, Syracuse is clearly playing the best in the conference outside of the top three. I just have a weird feeling about the NC State game on Saturday. Maybe we'll play so well on Wednesday that I'll forget about it and we'll win the game going away. But the good thing, if you're looking for some reason to feel positive about Saturday, every time I have a weird feeling like this game's going to be closer than it is, Louisville tends to play as well as it plays all season. And every time I feel like we're just going to beat the brakes off somebody, it winds up being a really close game. But that's kind of where I am with this team. Do you have any? Go ahead.
Let me ask you this. I was going to ask you, what? Give me your final total and what teams for making the tournament from the ACC.
As of right now?
What you think is going to happen in the end?
I think five teams are going to make it from the ACC. And I don't think it's going to be Virginia. Like, I think that I don't think people really fully grasp how bad their offense is. Like, right now, they would have the worst overall offense and the worst three-point offense in the history of the ACC. Like, that's the fact that they're even talked about as a potential at-large team just goes to show how ungodly good they are on offense, but are on defense, I should say. But they're so bad on offense that it almost doesn't matter. They cannot score on anybody. They should have lost to Wake Forest over the weekend. That's just a bad team. I think that, like, at this point, I think Syracuse is going to make the tournament. And then the computer numbers seem to like Virginia Tech more than they like the other teams that are in the middle of the conference right now. And they have that neutral court win over Michigan State that's going to keep looking better and better. So that's just kind of my guess right now. I'm going to say that five teams make it. It's the big three. And then it's Syracuse, and then it's Virginia Tech. A week ago, I said it was NC State and Virginia Tech, and now I'm backing off NC State. I think that they have a lot of work to do, and there's some weird stuff going on. There's, I think, some chemistry issues with that team, but that's where I am. What do you say?
I'm with you with five. I'm going to swap Virginia and Virginia Tech. I don't know. I have too much faith in Tony Bennett. And again, I've watched Virginia. I know how bad they are offensively. But they just seem like a team that even when they don't have their best game offensively, they can still pull out and win games. And I don't know. I just Virginia Tech, you know, they got the new coach. It's been like definitely a surprise. I know they were picked to finish, you know, towards the bottom of the conference. I just don't know from a talent standpoint, you know, going down the stretch when games maybe mean a little bit more and they might not have the guys that have been in that situation before. I just kind of trust Virginia's players. I know they lost a lot, but they still got a couple of their key pieces with them from last year. I just have a little more faith in them. But again, gosh, even them, that's a very fringe pick for me. It's so weird for us trying to like come up with, you know, five teams from the ACC. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm not going to fight you on that. Like, I think that if you told me today Virginia makes the NCAA tournament and winds up making it fairly easily, like, would not be shocked at all if Tony Bennett finds a way to scrape just enough offense up to, you know, go 11-9 in this conference or 12-8 in this conference and have enough quality wins to make it happen. Speaking of Virginia Tech, real quickly before we get to Mike in the dumps and read some reviews, we got Boston College. We're recording this late Monday night. We got Boston College coming up late Wednesday night. They actually snapped a four-game losing streak by beating the Virginia Tech team that we were just talking about. Jim Christian 100% going to get fired after the season. There's no way around it. Like, this is going to be the last time that we see him unless we somehow play them in the ACC tournament. Is there any fear level for you going into this game? 9 o'clock up there, BC. We lost there a year ago. Is any concern whatsoever?
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I'm scared is because I'm thinking about the game last year where, like, the entire game I was like, oh, well, this is Boston College. We're going to come back anytime, and we never did. But I just think our team is playing too well right now. That would just be a very disappointing loss. I would say confidence-wise, I'm at I'll put it at a 10, an 8.9. And, yeah, I think we'll go up there and get the W.
Yeah, the game last year, you got to remember, like, we had lost 4 of 5. We were in the midst of that stretch where we'd had the Florida State collapse, we'd had the Duke collapse, we played that terrible game against Syracuse that you talked about earlier, we'd been beaten by Virginia down again. Like, that team had no confidence going into that game last year. And this year's team now all of a sudden has all the confidence in the world. They've won 6 straight, and they've been really good away from home, which is something that you couldn't say about that team last year in February. So I'm with you. Like, obviously, it's a game that could get close. Boston College has a couple of decent guards, but I can't see Louisville going up there and losing. I'll be really, really surprised if that winds up being the slip up. So I'm with you. My confidence level pretty high going into Wednesday night. All right, we usually end these podcasts by doing a Dan in the Dump segment. Dan has bad stuff happen to him pretty frequently. We're not going to do. I'm going to save Dan. We're going to do a Mike in the Dumps this week. And let me preface.
We'll call it Mike in the Mud.
Mike, I like that. That's better. Mike in the Mud. We're trudging through the muck here with Mike. Let me preface this by saying I made the comparison a few weeks ago when we were doing the whole, hey, I just got fired podcast, about how I felt kind of like a politician that had just lost a very public race every time I went outside and people started to. This still has been happening like the last 2 weeks. Every time I go out and like walk the dog or, yeah, I went to my nephew's basketball game tonight. At least a couple people will come over and be like, hey, man, like, you know, tough luck. Like, we're thinking about you. I think this is going to be a good thing for you. And it's the nicest thing in the world. And I appreciate it every single time. But it also is a constant reminder of something that was not so cool that happened to me pretty recently. So it's kind of hard to get over. Yeah, like tonight, we had a couple of guys come up. One of them said he was a big fan of the podcast. Shout out to you, Jacob. I told you I'd give you a shout out. I just did. Also, shout out to my nephew, Ben Rutherford. He and the St. Francis Wyverns took down the West End school tonight for the, I think it was the Round Ball Classic Championship. It was a fantastic game. 36-34. It came down to a last second shot. West End school just barely missed a game winning three. It was a fantastic game. But I've been going out and doing this stuff, and it just, you know, again, it's people just kind of feeling sorry for you and then me kind of feeling sorry for myself. So 2 days ago, I'm walking the dog and I'm almost home, and this huge dog that has attacked Penny before is running free. And here we go again. Like, I'm terrified. I'm trying to pick Penny up. The dog like goes right after Penny, and it's like, it's ferocious. It's on top of her. It's Penny screaming. I have to like dive and tackle this dog and like get it in a headlock and shove it off while Penny's like going crazy. The owner, who I now is my mortal enemy. I hope he somehow knows about this podcast. 'Cause the first time the fucking dog was just outside when they were outside hanging out. And it was pretty clear by the way that it ran over to my dog, the way that they reacted, that this was something that they were not cool with and they knew something bad was going to happen. This time, at least, the owner's like running after him and I think has his leash in his hand. But so anyway, so as I dove to the ground to tackle this dog, I completely fucked up my knee. Like, my knee it's like the size of an orange right now. It's all purple and blue. It got bloodied all up. So I say all that to say this. Now, not only when I go out in public do I have like the person every now and then who recognizes me feeling sorry for me, I've got this terrible limp that like makes it look like I'm even more pathetic and like asking for. I look like Ted Kennedy wearing the neck brace after fucking Chappaquiddick, where I'm just like, I'm just desperate for your sympathy out there. And it makes me feel like 10 times more of a loser. I've got this weird, just awful limp. And they're like, there's that radio guy who got fired. Can't even fucking walk anymore. Like, somebody go get that guy a wheelchair. Like, get him out of here. Give him some help. And I just feel I'm in the mud, Dan. I'm in the mud.
Let me ask you this. Does the dog and the dog owner live near you?
Yes, like very close.
God, this is great. So we have like dog neighbor rivalry 2020 on our hands in St. Matthews. Man, I'm like, I know there's another episode of this coming. I can just feel it. And
if it happens again, I'm not going to do anything my wife is going to just raise all sorts of hell. Like, I'm going to stick the big dog on him, and it's going to be Mary Rutherford, because it's not going to be me. She's going to be the one who goes crazy.
The dog encounters can get so awkward, like, because you're like, you just run over there and you're like, no, no, no. Like, and like the dogs are just like, look like they're like, you know, and just going like completely bonkers, like after each other. And it just get like, you got to like talk with the owner, like, oh no, I promise she's nice. As like the dogs are like showing their teeth and like nipping at each other. It can just get real awkward. So yeah, I kind of feel it for you in this situation.
She's a real sweetheart behind closed doors, like as she's like humping your leg and growling at you. Like, yeah, that's always a good thing.
We love Penny.
Penny's the best. Penny rules. That's the other thing too, is like I'm so protective of her and I just want to fucking kill this dog. But anyway, I didn't. I held off, but the dog won. My knee is completely busted and I look like a pathetic loser every time I go out and do anything. Every time we do this, we like to read reviews at the end. If you haven't checked out the podcast, wherever you can find podcasts, the Apple app, iTunes, whatever, please subscribe. Please give us a 5-star rating or a 4-star rating if you feel like that's fair. That's fine too. 3 stars, 2 stars. We kind of will hate you for that, but whatever. You do what you got to do. And if you can write us a review, it helps even more. All that stuff really, really helps. And to encourage you to do that, we like to read some of the reviews that we get. SJSGWKY says, this is the perfect way to relive a game and hear from two guys that not only know the sport, but have a passion for the cards. It's Card Chronicle blogs come to life and made even better with the obvious connection between Mike and Dan. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even like each other, so that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I know. Because you said that, I'm going to read this one then. KY Derby Racer says, not really any better option in town. I love hearing Mike get to talk Louisville uncensored and raw. As always, he doesn't disappoint. Dan's okay too, I guess. Maybe get the airport coughing under control.
I'll tell you right now, I'm more appreciative that Dan's okay too, I guess. Like, just put that on my tombstone. Yeah, Dan's okay. I'll take all that.
Here's the last one. Jonathan Grabhorn says, 5 stars. I have no idea what Dumpster Dan looks like, but based solely on his voice alone, I have to imagine that dude has a mustache.
God, you know what? Like, just because of that, I kind of want to turn into like a Ron Burgundy figure, like just when I like, you know, get wired for these podcasts, like put on a burgundy coat and be like, oh, but probably not going to happen.
Yeah, you're not going to do that. We should mention we've gone almost the entire podcast without mentioning what I think most of the comments, most of the reviews mentioned, which is the fact that the Louisville men's basketball team has not lost a game. Hell, the Louisville women's basketball team has not lost a game either since we started doing this podcast. So I think that, remember how like in the later Patino years, they would do like the no shave until we lose gimmicky thing. Maybe that should be you with the mustache. Grow the mustache until we actually lose a game with us doing the podcast.
Yeah, I'll talk that over with my wife. I'll let you know tomorrow.
All right. Big thanks to everybody for listening. We'll have a podcast up a couple more this week. I know we had a couple of days go by without one. Won't be the case anymore this week. We'll definitely have something up after the Boston College game pretty quickly. Again, please subscribe to the pod if you can. Give us a 5-star review if you can. All that stuff really helps us out. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you guys soon. Go Cards.
Go Cards.